Hello, everybody. For those wondering, this is Chris Broom, my buddy from Minnesota, put on the guitar. He is currently in a band called Quarterback Club in Minneapolis. Had him do a few ditties for us. He does all the music for Left Reckon, actually. I was just patting myself on the back for a great solo show. And in the middle of the pat, each pat sort of drove a new thing that I fucked up. One being, I didn't get into the DeSantis pivot of my Trump segment. I got too excited by the ketchups and the porcelain to even get to it. But that's what, and the other clip of Mark Meadows, what he was doing on January 6th. Second being, I'm professional, that I have to do a little promotion for our good buddies at American Prestige. So I want to read this to you. The world is growing more complicated by the day, but too often everyone seems to be operating on the same assumptions about world affairs. Not sure that world domination by the U.S. is the right path for America or the world? Have questions about conventional geopolitical thinking? Looking for a new perspective? Every week on American Prestige, historian and former Bernie Sanders advisor Daniel Bessner and journalist Derek Davison analyze U.S. foreign policy from a critical framework that sheds light on myriad topics related to international affairs. If you're curious to know what U.S. foreign policy would look like if the interests of all people in the world and not only rich Americans were taken into account, then you have to tune in to American Prestige. Listen and follow American Prestige on AmericanPrestigePod.com, on your favorite podcast app, and in the Substack iOS app. I'm professional. Look, we haven't done ads before, and it's easy to forget. I mean, we forget them on Majority Report quite a lot too. Sue me. Don't sue me, Derek and Daniel. But you know, the viewers can try, because I think they'll probably get thrown out. I promised a clip. Another clip of our buddy Trump. It's not looking good for him. And just to set the pretext for why certain sectors of the Republicans, which I would call rhinos, might be trying to move on from Trump, as Trump clearly wants to run for president again. I'm talking about all the fanboys for Ron DeSantis. You got to watch him closely over, especially as I think my perception is that these hearings, there was a vibe shift on the hearings. People, I feel like the GOP is a little bit more concerned about him than they were presenting. And here's that Meadows clip, though. Again, this is just a really fascinating view of a guy in, as he was going to allow a coup to happen. If other actors had stepped up, then Meadows sitting on his couch is different. And it's just like, I wonder what's going through that guy's mind. He's like, is this going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Anyway, here's Meadows.
Quite some time, and you know, I know we've spoken about Ben Williamson going in at one point, and I don't personally remember Ben going in. I don't doubt that he had gone in. But I remember him being alone in his office for most of the afternoon, around 2 o'clock to 2:05. Around 2 o'clock to 2:05, you know, we were watching the TV, and I could see that the rioters were getting closer and closer to the Capitol. Mark still hadn't popped out of his office or said anything about it. So that's when I went into his office. I saw that he was sitting on his couch, on his cell phone. Same as the morning where he was just kind of scrolling and typing. I said, hey, are you watching the TV, Chief? Because his TV was small and you can see it, but I didn't know if he was really paying attention. I said, you watching the TV, Chief? And he was like, yeah. So the writers are getting really close. Have you talked to the president? And he said, no, he wants to be alone right now, still looking at his phone. So I start to get frustrated because, you know, I sort of felt like I was watching a... This is not a great comparison, but a bad car accident that was about to happen where you can't stop it, but you want to be able to do something. And I remember thinking in that moment, Mark needs to snap out of this, and I don't know how to snap him out of this, but he needs to care. And I just remember I blurted out, I said, Mark, do you know where Jim's at right now? And he looked up at me at that point and said, Jim? And I said, Mark, he was on the floor a little while ago giving a floor speech. Did you listen? He said, yeah, it was real good. Did you like it? And I said, yeah. Do you know where he's at right now? He said, well, no, I haven't heard from him. And I said, you might want to check in with him, Mark. And I remember pointing at the TV and I said, the rioters are getting close. They might get in. And he looked at me and said something to the effect of, all right, I'll...
He said he'd give him a call. I just like the passivity and profile there. And I think, Maria, those things I don't think you talk about on electronic indexable communications. So that brings me to two other clips regarding Trump. First is our boy Joe Rogan stepping in with an endorsement of sorts for Ron DeSantis. Here is that clip here.
Yeah, so all this stuff is happening while we have a dead man as a president.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
are you throwing
not,
out any
it's not fun.
Any support towards anyone, or are you going to hold off? And because I know, didn't Elon Musk come out recently for DeSantis?
Yeah, I think Ron DeSantis would work as a good president. Mm-hmm. I mean, what he's done for Florida has been admirable.
Look, I feel like I'm doing breaking news right now. Yeah. That wasn't even on purpose.
I feel like what he did for Florida, a lot of people gave him a lot of grief, but ultimately he was correct. He was correct when it comes to like deaths. He was correct when it comes to protecting our vulnerable populations. He was correct in terms of distribution of monoclonal antibodies. And he was furious when the government tried to pull those. They were trying to pull very effective treatments. You know, he is not perfect. He's a human being. But
now, I should just say, I'm pretty sure that's bullshit about the monoclonal antibodies. As I recall, there was something about the efficacy there. But the more important, I mean... There's so much fucking bullshit when Joe Rogan starts talking about COVID that it's hard to know, like, oh, crap, that's like, anyway, the thing that I wanted to talk about, did a great job on deaths. The fuck? Excuse me? Did a great job on deaths? And all Joe Rogan, I'm imagining what's pinging around in there. It's that New York had bad per capita deaths, too. Guess what? Cuomo fucking sucks. Yeah. Florida is not good even by U.S. standards. Per capita deaths, Florida is, depending on how you want to phrase it, the guy that posted this video, reposted from the Post Millennial, said that U.S. was 18th in per capita deaths. Now, 18th in something you don't want to be number one at. You could call that, what, 32nd? Also? So this is the guy we're going to like fucking say did a great job on COVID. And like the crazy thing about this is how this anchors. Like we have a fight between just a sort of social homicidal maniacs like Ron DeSantis that want to celebrate how many deaths they got. Deaths from COVID in Florida, 75,000. It's bigger than my hometown of Bismarck, at least when I was growing up, didn't have 75,000 right now. Florida has a population of 21 million people. Taiwan has a population of 23 million people. How many people died in Taiwan? 6,448. That's not a fair comparison, people say. That's not a fair comparison, even though Taiwan's a denser country. Also closer to the source of the pandemic. But let's say, oh, Australia. How about Australia? Australia, 25.6 million people. That's 4 million, healthy 4 million more than Florida. 9,800 deaths. And so while it might be true that relative to other states, DeSantis is only moderately worse. We're coming from a position where America killed and maimed a bunch of its people by not caring about them through negligence during this pandemic relative to other countries. So I got a thread here. Population of Syria. Now, people point out, like, Syria's going through a war, but we'll go through – you can pick any country. But just for example, population of Syria, 17.5 million. Population of South Dakota, 879,336. Deaths from COVID – let me put this up for folks. Deaths from COVID, Syria, 3,150, South Dakota, 2,938. Mississippi, population 2.9 million, Kazakhstan, 18.75 million. Dead from COVID, Mississippi, 12,516. Dead from COVID, Kazakhstan, 13,663. South Korea, population 51.7 million. Iraq, 25.2 million. Tennessee, 6.7 million. South Korea deaths, 24,000. Iraq deaths, 25,000. Tennessee deaths, 26,000. Just do it. Go do your own state. And so we're going to say this guy did a good job on COVID, but relative to another guy who, like, killed a bunch of people in nursing homes, like Andrew Cuomo, like, great job. Did a great job on COVID deaths. And then he goes on, and then, like, let's just bitch a little bit more. I honestly, like, the moment that comes, just like, hey, did what I just say actually, like, scan with reality? Because, like, that I feel like that's that in that moment, like, he should be feeling a little bit of, like, And that instead goes to bitching about freedom and shit like this. Here he is.
Very effective treatments. You know, he is not perfect.
Oh, by the way, monoclonal antibodies? That's the only one we're going to mention, Joe? Come on. It wasn't just monoclonal antibodies we were going on and on about, was it? Ivermectin, Joe. Why won't you talk about that anymore? Does Unilever not want you to talk about that? Spotify, like, we got to cut it, man. We got enough of that, but we got to cut it. So now it's just monoclonal. I'm the guy speaking up for monoclonal antibodies. Oh, fuck. Thank you for your service. And in thanks for your service, here's a good, I don't know how much, CARES money for your brain force fucking supplement company. Aye, aye, Captain. Thanks for that. Dave Rubin has, I think, done events with DeSantis. He's at least done Photoshops there, but I think they're actually doing events now. There's a while where Dave was just appearing, like, in the background of photos where Ron DeSantis is looking like a wax, museum doll, but Dave Rubin has been theorizing, and I would just say, like, if I was a Trump supporter over DeSantis supporter, I think this is coming from somewhat the horse's mouth. I think if Dave Rubin isn't talking to DeSantis himself, he's talking to his staff.
So Trump is going to run. Now, there are reasons that it would be good if Trump runs. He is still a force that is undescribable in a way. What he can do culturally and get people out there and get the base fired up and all of those things. Like, I don't know that anyone else can do that, including DeSantis. The fact that the media hates him so much, the firestorm. But it's also a little bit of this. It's like, we know we're all sort of on the slow descent to hell right now. This administration, the media, the whole thing, they're just slowly dragging us to leftist socialist hell. Trump coming in is sort of opening up the gates to hell. Now, I think you can argue.
So, I mean, let's try to parse this metaphor a little bit. So we all know that we're being dragged to socialist hell. Because what? Because the bipartisan infrastructure bill? Because Democrats are not doing shit in response to Roe being gutted? Because they're still pissing around about student loan forgiveness? I honestly don't even know what I'm trying to think. If you're someone in the chat, I will put your message on screen. If you give me a plausible thing that they're, I mean, maybe it is. I mean, Joe's not, I get, they don't see, they can't talk about like national labor relations or NLRB. They can't talk about labor stuff because that's like, I think they're afraid to go there. And Dave Rubin, okay, Rand Paul comes on. Dave Rubin has a problem with military budgets. I mean, let's see how sincere that is. But also, so Biden is dragging us to a socialist hell somehow. Again, bipartisan infrastructure bill, I guess. But Trump wants to open the gates of hell. So is this two hells? We have like a regular hell and the socialist hell that Biden's giving. This theology is difficult.
Trump coming in is sort of opening up the gates to hell. Now, I think you can argue that maybe they should be opened up because it's like the slow descent to hell is no good. The slow descent to hell is sort of like the frog in the slowly boiling pot. And you don't even know once you're...
Right. So... You're going to hell. And you might as well just jump in the fire because, like, if frog... You'd want, honestly, I got to say, if I have that choice, if it's between jump into fire and get slowly boiled as a frog without knowing it, I'm taking the slow boiling. That sounds a lot like the jump right into the fire.
Right. Once they're making you into frog's legs. To rip it all open again, get the stuff out there, and maybe give these guys the kill shots, so to speak. I mean that as a metaphor of really defeating this woke bullshit, the cancel culture stuff. Like, Trump is probably the best to do that. Now, that being said, Trump has a lot of problems, too. Trump has...
I mean, the kill shot, metaphorically speaking, of course, against all this woke bullshit. Like, what is this? What is, like, the policy? Like, a CRT ban? In the Constitution, like that's the 27th Amendment now, or sorry, I don't know how many amendments are. Whatever the next one is.
Problem, which is that if he believes that the election was stolen, which he does, I've heard him speak about it firsthand just a couple weeks ago at Mar-a-Lago. I mean, the guy obviously does. It's like, have you done?
Now that there's a little bit of a detachment here. Dave really thought. I'm pretty sure you can find this was a stolen election, Dave, being as you know, authoritative as Trump with that this is a stolen election. Now he thinks it's stolen.
Said, Trump has a lot of problems, too. Trump has a problem, which is that if he believes that the election was stolen, which he does, I've heard him speak about it firsthand just a couple weeks ago at Mar-a-Lago. I mean, the guy obviously does. It's like, have you done the work to ensure that they won't steal it from me again, if that's what you believe? And I don't know that he has. Does he have?
That's frankly a good question. Trump, you got fucking one-termed and booted, bro. Have you fixed that? If I was a right winger, I'd be asking that question. Now, oh crap, I blew my cover. I'm supposed to be a Trump partisan here. Maybe I'll edit that out. How can I make that?
Does he have enough people behind him, effective people, to run an administration more effectively than last time? I don't know. The other problem, I think this is really his biggest.
Wait, you saying I was ineffective last time? What kind of house you living in? What kind of house you living at the start of my administration? Huh?
Issue, and these are not things that are insurmountable. These are just things that need to be said so that they can be dealt with, is that the amount of hate that people have for him, which I think is mostly unwarranted, obviously. If he runs, I would say probably 5 million people, I don't know that we can get an exact number on this, but I would say roughly 5 million people who either wouldn't vote because they're so depressed by Biden, or they just don't care to vote, or they're on the fence, or whatever, just out of hatred for him, will vote. That's an issue.
Again, like, that's another true thing that the amount of like actual grounded talking points Dave is spewing here makes me think he's talking with Christina Pusha or someone from Ron DeSantis' office. And it's true. Joe Biden set records for Joe fucking Biden. Joe Biden set records for election turnout because of Trump. No one gives a fuck about Joe Biden. Joe Biden, a multi-time losing candidate, set records because of Donald Trump. Trump set records himself, just not good enough records. And so that is a dilemma. And that's something. If I'm a DeSantis supporting Republican, of course that's a problem.
Will vote. That's an issue. That really is an issue. Now, the DeSantis thing, it's like DeSantis has proven himself to be, in essence, I think you could argue that he really is.
Now, so he did the pros and cons of Trump. Let's see if he does pros and cons of DeSantis. What do you think? Do anyone want to take bets that this is going to be balanced out with some cons? Maybe there's one in there. I don't remember verbatim. We'll see.
Now, the DeSantis thing, it's like DeSantis has proven himself to be, in essence, I think you could argue that he really is. He's not the president of the nation by title, but he has been the leader of the nation for the last 2 years. He has been the leader of defending freedom. He has run this state brilliantly. He's in the middle of his own reelection situation. He has a ton of money.
Freedom. Is Joe Rogan on the same group chat? The media group chat for Ron DeSantis? Freedom. Yeah.
He has run this state brilliantly. He's in the middle of his own reelection situation. He has a ton of money. He's done it right. He doesn't care about the media stuff. He's effective. He's hired the right people around him. He has an incredible staff. So he has all the pieces there.
What was that?
He's done it right. He doesn't care about the media stuff. He's effective. He's hired the right people around him. He has an incredible staff. So
he has an incredible staff.
All the pieces there. The unknown is, how do they come to some kind of agreement? Do they have a sit down? Do they have a private moment at Mar-a-Lago or up at the governor's mansion in Tallahassee and figure out, what are we going to do? Are you going to run for VP? Are we going to make some agreement here? Do I do it one?
Not specific on who said they'd run for VP, make some agreement. Well, we'd have to assume that Trump was just president. It would be DeSantis.
Time, and then you come in after 4 years, like, maybe the best situation, it's probably what I think, is that Trump is the body man. He's the linebacker, pushing everybody out of the way, fighting the media, running the rallies, doing all that. And DeSantis is the running back and goes right through and scores the touchdown. That probably makes the most sense.
Now, let me break down that football metaphor for you. So, DeSantis is the running back. He's got the ball. Trump is the body man / linebacker. Which Dave's mistaken. He means to say fullback. Because if it was the linebacker is the guy behind the defensive line, basically sort of like they're sort of like three quarterbacks right behind the line waiting to mirror what the offense does. And often they're leaders in the tackles. So Trump, if this metaphor, if we took this metaphor at face value, it would be Trump is somehow playing defense on DeSantis, who's trying to score a touchdown. But for some reason, this line or Trump's an inside man, a linebacker that's clear. If you had a linebacker, if you're an offense and you got one of the linebackers, that's an advantage, folks, because they could do exactly like I'm saying. You could really disrupt the defense if you got to start on the side of the defense as a linebacker and then just fuck with the linemen and stuff. You'd score a lot of touchdowns. That maybe Republicans do play that way, and maybe I just need to think about what that means in the real life. But look, he means a fallback, and let's just take that. Let's just allow the correction. He means Donald Trump should be the fallback and clear the way. I mean, we're going up the two hole. We're going to do a sweep. What are we going to do? Clear the way, taking all the blows, absorb the contact, so Ron DeSantis, frivolous ass, can trot into the end zone and get all the glory? I don't know Trump personally. I haven't met his kids like Dave Rubin has. But I don't think he would... He'd go for that, really. I think he would say, go fuck yourself. I'm running for president. If you want to fight me, it's beef. And you know, Trump steaks still sell them. Folks, somebody asked a question that I wanted to get to earlier. That's enough of you, Dave. That I actually wanted to respond to after... it's not something I can address in depth, but we should have Gene on with regards to the NATO expansion and what Turkey's getting out of the deal. Does not sound good for the Kurds, for instance. And I mean, I don't have the expertise to opine on that. American Prestige, which I read the ad for earlier, those folks do, and I would check out Davison's Substack and that stuff. So do we have some let me pull up some the voicemails. Voicemail we got, leave us a message here. I'm gonna go navigate over to the call, see if we got any, and can take some chats too. I see both YouTube and Twitch chat, so if people want to sound off in there. Actually, let me just put up a little tiny bit of that music again for a little bit while I do this. Okay. Now, let's see here. It looks like we got a few voicemails. Here's the first one for us this evening. And to try to get them in quick, too, because they sometimes get clogged up in Twilio. I'm not sure why what the problem is there, but it's too off-center. I'll try to get to them.
Hello, everybody. This is Jason in Rhode Island once again. You might remember me calling her a few times earlier about working at Stericycle and some what had been some ongoing union negotiations there and the ratification of the contract and how a strike was averted even though we did vote to authorize one and so on and so on. But I'm not calling tonight about Stericycle. I'm calling about a previous workplace, and that was DHL. I'm calling to let all you know that all of my brother and sister Teamsters over at DHL are currently on strike because DHL's last best offer to them in the year 2022 was a $1.55 raise, their first raise in almost 2 years. A pittance, an absolute pittance, a joke. And on healthcare, they only offered them 70% per individual a discount and 30% per family. This amounts to a $5 a week discount from the previous contract. This type of behavior is absolutely ridiculous, and that's why they're on strike. It's happening right now. It's been a week as of today they've been on strike. I'm calling to tell all you this. It's happening because DHL does not want to pay these men and women what they're worth. If you want to maybe talk to DHL about it, you can try calling their 1-800 number, which is, excuse me, on their website. Just, it's 1-800, and DHL, you'll find it on Google. Or if you don't want to do that, you prefer to harass them on social media. I mean, engage with them on social media about these labor practices. You can find them on both Instagram and Facebook, where if you have tuned in right now, you'll find some amazing posts about how awesome it is to be a woman working at DHL and how LGBTQ friendly they are. So that's what's going on. Please keep these people in your thoughts, okay? They're going through a lot right now with this strike, and they got a lot of scabs down there working for them, but we'll see what happens. So, again, that's DHL in Pawtucket. Workers are on strike right now. Local 251 Teamsters are on strike. Thank you very much. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Appreciate the call. Folks, follow those marching orders there. And just generally, you know, maybe it's the lapsed Catholic in me, but I started the show with Mick Lynch. And the idea of making sure you get out and support, like if you have unionized workers in your area, like one should be maybe a DSA that can help you do this in an organized fashion. But like, absolutely go to, if you're in Austin, if you have for Austin, let's just go to the Starbucks, even if it's across town. Make a day of it and tell them you support their union in general and online. Like, I don't think it's pointless at all. I think, like I said, it'd be much better to get involved in organizations that are getting out into the community. If you fucking pissing around on social media, harass these companies until they, take care of their workers. So that's awesome. Let's do another call here. And I will try to get the Discord questions too. I realized I forgot those last time I did a solo episode. But here is the next call.
Hey, everybody. It's Joe Snuffy. All right. So just had a fucking fascinating thing happen at work. Just to set the stage, end of last week, we found out that our schedule for this week, where we were expecting to be able to work flex hours, where we work 10-hour days for 4 days out of the week, and we get a day off at the either the beginning or end or start of a week. It kind of varies each time. Anyways, we're supposed to get Friday this week off, have the option to work more. Manager decided, gave us the runaround, and then management decided to not allow us to do that last Friday. My coworkers were all pissed off about it. Some people were speaking up on their own to management about this. I was meaning to talk to them and suggest, hey, why don't we all just use some paid time off hours and either, leave early or just take that day off anyways, because, hey, all right, they want to keep the place open. Well, good luck keeping the fucking place open without anybody here. So first time that I ran into those same people this week was, just like 20 minutes ago. And literally before I could start talking to them about it, they told me, hey, by the way, like, come in to work on Friday and clock out early so that, we can pressure them not to fuck with us. So, like, on their own, organically, people in my department had already come up with this plan. They just didn't have a next step afterwards. So, all of a sudden it's gone from there being only about like one or two other people that were looking to organize with me to quite a few more, and we're gonna start having meetings and actually strategizing and going through all this shit. So, yeah, I'm now completely and utterly pumped. By the way, just to give it as a quick cool things going on. Partnership between DSA in Rhode Island and the Teamsters 251 has been bearing fruit. We've actually got tomorrow our monthly meeting for DSA is going to be at their union hall with them, and the Teamsters are going to lay out their plan for organizing Amazon warehouses in Mass and Rhode Island, which we're going to work together on, and also they're helping some of us try to organize. We're helping them with the strike, the strike in Pawtucket against DHL. Fuck DHL. And, everybody have a good night. All right. Bye.
Well, beautiful stuff, Joe. Thanks for the call as always. Good luck with that. Let's see, we've got one. Let me do a refresh so I don't freak anybody out. Yeah, good luck, Teamsters. Okay, we've got one more here. We'll do. This is going to be from our boy Dave from Jamaica.
Hey, Bat. Good job running solo so far. I'll make this nice and spicy. Or I should say spicy, nice and short. So as you were talking about Joe Rogan and conservatives in general, do this thing that annoys the ever-living shit out of me, which is the fake humbleness. Like, I don't know anything. And then when you kind of validly challenge some dumb thing they believe, case in point with Joe Rogan, the whole COVID stuff, they become even more reactionary. So that study about what radicalized people when it came to the financial crisis, people being moved more towards the left, being radicalized by material stuff, and conservatives universally, what radicalizes them is when people tell them they're wrong. They don't even have to be mean. There's people telling them, hey, you're incorrect on this. So fragile. So fragile that they become right-wingers because somebody told them, hey, man, that might be wrong. And that is conservatism in a nutshell.
Yeah, I mean, that. Thank you, Dave. That reminds me of a tweet I saw recently. I'm pulling up. It's from a guy named Nate Hockman, who's from the Claremont Institute, which, like, a bunch of the fucking... I just started something. I need to go back to this. Sorry about that. I accidentally started my Ringer podcast and started hearing Wozni Lambre talk about Jalen Brunson, and I have like three screens here and a million tabs. It's going to take me forever to find it, but I found the thread that I want to. That reminds me of what Dave from Jamaica was saying there. So this is. This dude, Nate Hockman, Claremont Institute. Claremont Institute, I should research that. Maybe we should go in deep about it. But it's a cesspool of reactionary sort of like freaks for like grist for like type of people you'd want to like spack a Supreme Court with corporate freaks. And let me take this down here. So Nate writes, writing a longish essay for The Atlantic this week about why young conservatives are so much more radical than their predecessors. I have my own suspicions about the root cause, obviously, but curious to hear what the thoughts of other young righties on here. Why are we so crazy? This guy, Armin Tolui. I can remember my exact radicalization moment, January 20th, 2017, coming face to face with Antifa on campus. One of them threatened to sodomize me with a wooden sign handle through a brick. Yeah, I mean, that's bad. I mean, I do think, like, let's not take that too much. Can't tell you how many times on my campus right after Trump was elected / inaugurated is the answer I hear from young cons to this question. The campus left basically radicalized an entire generation of young Republicans in that six-month period. And what I would say is it wasn't the left that did that. They're always going to do that. Young reactionaries happen. A certain number of people will basically hate other people and distrust them so much that they will create entire personalities around the idea, and it's rational that we should cut this fund that's feeding hungry kids. That it's rational that we can't trust people to seek their own health care if that's abortion or if it's trans care. A certain number of people will do that, and they'll often be the types of kids that go to Stanford. I mean, the ones that matter. I mean, the ones that might kill you are probably the ones that don't. Out of just, you know, lack of achievement, maybe, and frustration. But these sorts of Claremont kids, Nate Hockman, what's his background? ISI fellow at the National Review Online. Fun thing to know about the National Review. If you look at The Nation, a magazine that's been around since the Civil War, they're very clear that when you buy their digital product, you're getting access to their entire back catalog, going back to what they were saying in the Civil War and Reconstruction and afterwards. Probably not all good, I imagine, even though it was, you know, pro-abolition paper. National Review's been around since the 50s, I think. You can't go back past the 90s, I'm pretty sure. You can, I mean, there's people have archived at like library databases, have digitized and archived old National Reviews. Jeet Heer has done a deep dive on that. And you know what's troubling is like the reason that they don't, a place like National Review doesn't digitize their archives is because you wouldn't want to do Control F apartheid and see what all the pro-apartheid stuff that comes up. You Control F Rhodesia or Mandela. And it would be disgusting stuff. And so they don't. I've had an exchange with Rich Lowry. You search my tweets for the time that me and Rich Lowry have gone back and forth. I begged him, please offer the full archives and I'll subscribe, Rich. Rich Lowry, editor of the National Review. He bluffed. He tagged his like tech guy. He's like, let's get on this. It hasn't happened. Exactly, GRT84. The Economist is another one. Like, I mean, all these. New York Times was basically counter-abolition initially, another Civil War era paper. Obviously, people know about the pro-Nazi stuff in the 30s, about Hitler and stuff that the New York Times wrote. But at least the New York Times ain't hiding it. I'm pretty sure New York Times, you can get access to all of that stuff if you subscribe there. That's being honest about it. So, yeah, Claremont Institute. I see if there's any funny. Yeah. No, I'm not. We don't have time to go through that. So, let me go through Discord. I don't usually do this. It's usually David, but I think I can figure it out and take some questions. And I'm also looking in do I think Jalen Brunson is a max player? No, but they didn't sign him to a max. I'm worried about – if I'm a Mavs fan, though, I worry about what they're going to do. Mavs, they should have re-signed him for a lower number. Okay, so Left Reckoning, where is this? There we are. I'm very bad with Discord, so it might take me a little bit. But live show Q&A, is there stuff in here? Yeah, here we go. Joe Snuffy, lots of normies are shocked at the complete lack of response from Dems over the Roe decision. I'm wondering if you guys think that this time it will sink in that and stick that Dem leadership genuinely believes that apartheid poetry is an adequate response to these sorts of things. Yeah, Nancy Pelosi's poem was amazing. Oh, and for a bonus, what stunt do you expect Nancy Pelosi to pull when president for life DeSantis seizes power? My guess is she'll hold a rap battle with Juan Guaido. Matt, the thing with monoclonal antibodies and Ron DeSantis was that Florida was one of the seven states that had hoarded 2/3 of the nation's total supply of them, spiking deaths in other states. Ah, I remember shortages. The CDC intervened and implemented a non-market system for distributing monoclonal antibodies nationally based on need, and DeSantis pretended that the CDC was tyrannically banning all MAs. Well, thank you for that, Joe. That's a really good detail. I didn't know that. Crumley and Josh, I feel like the problem with the Jan 6 hearings is not the hearings themselves, but that the Democrats are in charge of them. Yeah, exactly. They should be going into the hearings with the mindset of wanting to tear apart the Republican Party. Instead, they want due process to create a better Republican Party. Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, they're all, fundamentally, yes. It is... And, you know, like, I was worried. I guess I will say I was worried that it was just going to all be like, this guy smashed this window, and he's from, Wisconsin, and he, you know, has a small business. But I like that it's been so focused on some of those, like the who, where they know it. And it's gone at Pence because, like, Pence was set up to be like a hero. And I think, anyway, we'll see. Yeah, I think, I don't know. I didn't see Jimmy do that, but that's really stupid. Pretty despicable. Yeah. I mean, I think the proper thing to think when you see the missile strike in Ukraine is one, this is heinous, disgusting. And also that we've done that multiple times. Folks, we have, let me do another last refresh of our phone system here. And, I've not read Edwin Black books. Goes into great detail about early American corruption and science involvement in the history of eugenics. That's interesting. War Against the Weak. Thanks for the recommendation. Spin me a sailcloth. Oh, we do got one in under the bell here. Got old friend Kowalski.
Hey, Matt, wonderful show this evening. And remember, just because you're going solo doesn't mean we won't all still expect an episode of you going solo again on Friday. I mean, when anyone gets sick around me, I still have to go tend cattle. So, you know, no excuses. But, hey, David, I don't know if you're watching this, but, you know, I hope you feel better. I've gotten COVID in the past. It sucks. You lose a lot of energy. But you are in a very good age group for survivability. So, you know, maybe you could mosey on down to, you know, a neocon in a corner office, you know, just shoot shit for a while and help some fellow millennials move up in the world. Because, you know, as John Brown would say, power is not given. It has to be taken. Have a good evening and feel better.
Kowalski, you got to be careful. The Goon Squad could still visit you. Because I'll visit you out in Nebraska. That is very funny. Well, folks, I think that's where I'm going to call it tonight. But I only call it after I confirm that I will be doing another Friday stream. I would say 8, 7:30. We'll see when around. I got to eat and stuff. You know, sometimes it's easier just to keep pushing it back a half hour. So, but it'll be around the evening, and maybe I'll play Obra Dinn some more. That was pretty fun last time. But yeah. Anyways, thank you so much. Get well soon, David, and we'll see you folks this weekend. And well, I'll see you on Friday.